radio waves and many other things that you talked about it in details. And actually, you talked about the truth, Jayanta Chakrabarty from India. Many thanks for writing to us. It was great. Thank you for your honesty and your frank words about IRIB English Radio. We are so proud to have you with us. Jayanta Chakrabarty, you are a faithful listener. You are our old and regular listeners, and we congratulate you for telling us the truth. Thank you for your compliments, and thank you for your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio and, of course, listeners' special program. We also thank you for your honesty about IRIB English Radio programs, as you complimented us for our innovativeness, variety, and unique quality that are always presented in a friendly, easy-to-understand style. We are also happy to have you with us. And as you described IRIB shortwave as a very good way of communication, and we agree with you in this field, of course. We are also so fortunate to have you with us, Jayanta Chakrabarty. We wish you all the best, and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. Thanks a lot. We are here to stay, we are here to tell the truth, and we are here to welcome your views and thoughts about our programs. But we have to say goodbye at this edition of Listeners Special because time tells us to do so. So before saying goodbye to you, I would like to appreciate those of you who have kindly sent us reception reports and emails and letters from around the world, including Jayanta Chakrabarty from India, Arantio from the Philippines, Ozren Radulovic from Bosnia and Herzegovina, Anika An from India, Alexei Kolako from Russia, also P.S. Sekar from India, and Nicolas Perrin from France. Please keep in touch with us at Listeners Special Program and IRIB English Radio. We wish you all the best. God bless you and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We will be glad to hear from all our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send us emails to englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at parstoday.ir/en. Our phone number is 0098-21-2201-3720. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and He's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. A very warm welcome to yet another episode of Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we answer the queries, questions you have regarding the Islamic upbringing of your children. Well, today in our studio, we have with us very talented expert. She is Sister Salma Khalafan, and the more I talk about her, it is less indeed. Well, she's an expert in Islamic upbringing, and today we have had this pleasure to invite her. And we're going to discuss some of the very important issues, especially regarding the teenagers, with her today. Assalamu alaikum, ma'am.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
A very warm welcome.
Thank you so much.
Well, Sister Salma Khalfan, when it comes to upbringing, upbringing in itself is not a very easy task. But when it comes to teenagers, they are kind of rebellious. They don't want to listen to us. They have their own rules, own world. Be that boys, be that girls, they are have that rebellious nature when it comes to teenage. So why is the upbringing of a teenage child such a difficult task?
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Bringing up children, in all, is a very challenging task. And when we see that our children become youth, we feel that it's now the burden is lesser physically. But if you go and see, it's more mentally. Now the challenges that we face upbringing a teenager that are more harder than those when you face when the child is young.
Yeah.
Because now the child has become a mature adult.
Yeah.
Understanding adult, though with least experience.
Yeah.
But he wants that independence of his own, and he thinks that he's right in every case, right? So, I feel that Imam Ali alayhi salam, as in the hadith, he quotes that, train your children according to the times that they live in. So this is a very challenging thing that we as parents were the generation before them, like maybe 20, 30 years before them.
Okay.
And when they come, then we think that, we were like this, so why not they behave like this? But times have changed. Everything has changed. Technology has changed.
And so
rapidly. Cultural influence and peer pressure and all in all, the environment, the atmosphere, the people, everything has changed, right? So we don't need to, undermine the fact that if they are, hard to train, and we should now try to understand it. Actually, the tarbiyah has been so challenging ever since. So now, if we want to bring up the teenager according to a start ahead, then we need to empower our tarbiyah. We need to put a new power in our tarbiyah, precision in our tarbiyah, according to the day and age, of course. And that'll be long-term more effective and more long-lasting for them.
All right. So the important thing is that you have to empower your upbringing.
Empower it.
Right.
And that requires more struggle.
Yeah.
And of course, tarbiyah itself requires struggle. It's not something that, you give food to them, you are at their service, you bath them, you change them, or you listen to them. No, there's something that you have to have concern about them.
It's said that they need more of your presence than your presence.
Yeah, I guess, more of your concern.
Yeah.
Your presence in the heart, as you say that, it's very important to bring the children with a heart. So a teenager himself or herself goes through a lot of changes, bodily and mentally and, intellectually, in every way, emotionally. So they are met with a lot of challenges outside as well as inside, through peer pressure, through, for example, in the streets outside when they go, their hormones are changing, when they're met with some immodest character, be hijabi or, unveiled. They really struggle hard. And they're not right age to even get married, because of the lack of experience and lack of education. The norm is such that they can't marry at the age of 17, although that's the right age if they're mature enough. But they just can't. It's not it doesn't fit it properly according to the way things go about.
Right. So we will discuss more about that with you after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to Islamic Upbringing. This is IRIB English Radio. We have Sister Salma Khalfan today with us, who's an Islamic scholar and an expert in the Islamic upbringing. Well, Sister Salma Khalfan, we had been talking about why teenage upbringing is such a difficult task. And first of all, you said that we got to be, as parents, stopping the expectations that as we had been behaving as teens, we should not be expecting our children today after some, you know, that a generation gap now to be behaving the same way that we have been behaving, because time has changed and things have changed. There was no digital media that time, but now things have totally changed, and a generation gap brings about so many changes. You said that there's peer pressure, there's physical, emotional and mental change in the child, and what we as parents need to consider is to empower our upbringing. Yeah. So what more we should be taking into consideration?
Yes, so as I said, that they're going through a lot of changes, you know, so we should keep that in mind, and what kind of changes are they going through, and what kind of challenges are they faced with, which we were probably not facing at that time. So the formula of the upbringing remains the same, you know, and that's, as I'll mention later, but in itself, you know, the upbringing process is like a creative process, something that you need to make the fabric of with a lot of thought provocation, a lot of deep thinking, a lot of concern. It's not an easy task, you know, to put two and two together and get just four. No, you have to think about it and how to go about it. As far as teenage is concerned, more so, you know, than children also. So parents should not only, you know, run around doing things for children via the service. Like a father complains that, what more does the child want? He's behaving so, you know, badly, aggressively. Right. The mother is at the service and I'm at work, you know, earning so much, whatever he wants, he gets. That's not all that they need. Right. The requirements are much larger than that, yeah. Right? So the main thing is the concern, which is very important. The concern, that worry, that how will you manage to make him happy and successful and obey the commandments of Allah. Because it's only through obedience of the commandments of Allah that a person can be happy. Be he your child, your husband, your father, or your workmate, or any friend of yours. If you want them to be happy, you know, that. Because the fabric of the soul is made up of the listening to the commandments of Allah. Right. So if any worldly, for example, luxury is given, or some kind of, any kind of, you know, treat is given, nothing gives that everlasting peace as much as obedience of the commandments of Allah and love of Allah reaps those benefits. So now, this concern requires thinking and action.
Okay.
Deep thinking and action. And what are the examples of this deep thinking and concern and action that we can take is through reading books.
Okay.
Empowerment of our tarbiyah is through reading the latest books written on upbringing of the child, watching them,
yeah.
Being alert about them, their feelings, ready to listen to them. You see, parents sometimes, they think that the children have grown up, they're teenagers, so they feel that now, you know, like they have their own things to do and we have our own things to do. So they're not ready to lend a listening ear to them.
Right.
So when they notice these kind of things, these kind of reactions, they get so put off.
Right.
And they feel that we are acting indifferent. Whilst we might be very innocently doing it, for example, whilst doing our daily course, you know. or a father whilst he's watching television or reading the newspaper, or mother whilst cooking.
And they notice
They notice these things very much, and it affects their souls.
Right.
It makes them feel that we are indifferent and we don't understand.
Exactly. Now it's important what parents have to be doing here. And I'll ask you that after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam said, "Honor your children and teach them good manners."
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. We have Sister Salma Khalfan with us, who is an Islamic scholar and an expert in the Islamic upbringing. Well, Sister, you had been talking about the teenage upbringing, and it's really a difficult task. Now, a teenager who is suffering from a mental change, a physical change, an emotional change, starts noticing small things very in detail and feels that his parents are very indifferent when they don't show that concern. Like you said, a father feels like I'm earning and I'm bringing things home. But, you know, as we said earlier, like bringing presents is not much important rather than your presence. So your presence at home is really important and giving them quality time. So what else should parents be doing to make these teens feel at least some kind of peaceful.
Yeah, wanted, right? So it should be also like comforting them, answering their questions, showing love for them, even if they've grown up, you know, to show that physical bond is very important. And comforting them, ready to talk to them, you know, like being ready. Sometimes, you know, we see that when teenagers grow up, the first sign they show is that aloofness. They want to be on their own. They're quiet. So we should go to them and talk to them and tell them, I understand what you must be going through.
All right.
I probably have been through that too, you know. And remember that if you want to talk about it, I'm there for you. And the child is sure to come. It's guaranteed to come because he has to or she has to talk about it to someone or the other.
Right.
Let them not talk to their friends or peers about that. Let you be the first person for them to turn to. That friendliness should be there for you to support them, to show that supportive nature.
Right. So as teenagers, there are teens who need some time, who need some, attention. You're saying that you never know what kind of fears they have, what kind of friends they are hanging around with, and then you should be yourself the first people to be answering them.
Yes, that's right. So a rule in bringing up the children is that however much they are closer to their birth age, they can take more influence. You know, however much they are closer to their date of birth, and the year of birth, they will be influenced quicker if you give them the right tarbiyah.
So the earlier you start...
Exactly. The earlier you start, the better it is. So don't wait to, ingrain such good qualities like truthfulness, trustworthiness, good etiquette, in their own level, of course.
Right.
From a young age.
Exactly, because there are some parents who feel like, who say, a child is still young. Like if someone tells them, your child does not have a good tarbiyah, he does not have a good upbringing, what are you doing? You're not concerned. They say like, oh, come on, she's a child, he's a child.
You should not take that easily, right?
Yeah. You're saying that as the... even if they are younger, that's the best age to get started.
Yes. In their own level, in their own capacities, of course.
Right. So, I think it's a kind of topic we need to discuss more about this, and time is running out today for today's session. Thank you so much for being with us. Thank you so much, dear listeners. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. If you have any queries, you can feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. You can also listen to our programs again. Go back to our official website, which is www.parstoday.ir/en. You can go to the tab Call of Islam, COI, and find out an archive of our programs there. Also, look for us in the social media platforms by just searching Call of Islam Radio. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll have a look at the verses of chapter Nur, the 24th chapter of the Holy Quran, and different commentary points of these verses. Brothers and sisters, we have reached the 54th verse of chapter Nur.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Qul ati'u Allah wa ati'u ar-rasul. Fa'in tawallaw fa'innama 'alayhi ma hummila wa 'alaykum ma hummiltum. وَإِن تُطِيعُوهُ تَهْتَدُوا وَمَا عَلَى الرَّسُولِ إِلَّا الْبَلَاغُ الْمُبِينُ.
Say, obey Allah and obey the Messenger. But if you turn away, then upon him is only that duty with which he has been charged, and upon you is that with which you have been charged. And if you obey him, you will be rightly guided. And there is not upon the messenger except the responsibility for clear notification.
Regarding this holy verse, dear listeners, we mentioned that the Prophet ﷺ was commissioned to convey Allah's commandment to all people, whether they accept it or not. But whatever this was,
It was a very heavy load on the shoulders of the people, and that's why the Holy Quran says, وَعَلَيْكُمْ مَا حُمِّلْتُمْ. Therefore, we read in a narration by Imam Baqir alayhi salam about the Prophet, peace be upon him and his progeny, who said, Oh, those who recite the Holy Quran, be in awe of Allah Almighty, be pious towards His book that is a burden on your shoulder, because both you and I are responsible. So this is really interesting, because both the Prophet and the people who were listening to him, or probably not accepting his words, they were all having this Holy Quran as burden. And this is why it says, فَإِنَّمَا عَلَيْهِمَا حُمِّلْ. It will be on his shoulder what is imposed on him. وَعَلَيْكُمْ مَا حُمِّلْتُمْ. And on you is what is imposed on you. So this is what this tradition suggests. The Prophet says, because both you and I are responsible. But why is the Holy Prophet ﷺ responsible? This narration by Imam Baqir alayhi salam continues that the Prophet says, I am responsible for conveying its message to you, and you are also responsible before Allah's book and my practice and my sunnah that are on your shoulder. So you have to obey them.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
Dear listeners, as you noticed, the beginning of the verse suggests قُلْ أَطِيعُ اللَّهُ وَأَطِيعُ الرَّسُولُ. The word أَطِيعُ has been repeated in the beginning of the verse, so the repetition of the Quranic phrase أَطِيعُ or obey indicates that the Prophet ﷺ has got two missions. One is declaration of revelation, obeying Allah, and the other is declaring governmental rules, which is obeying the Messenger of the Almighty Allah. So both these territories need to be covered in the invitation of the Holy Prophet. So he was commissioned to talk about them both. The second point regarding the verse is that in the Holy Quran, we encounter some instances that contain two commandments from the side of Allah mentioned together, and both of them must be carried out, and doing one of them is not enough. And frankly, doing one of them is not acceptable. For example, the Almighty Allah suggests that faith and deeds must accompany each other. So the verse says, those who believe and do righteous deeds. الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا وَعَمِلُوا الصَّالِحَاتِ.
Also, ritual prayers and alms tax. And the verse of the Quran says, and keep up the prayer and pay the poor rates. Or expressing gratitude to Allah and parents together. Be grateful to me and to both your parents. And obeying Allah and His Messenger in this case. Ati'u Allah wa ati'u Rasul. Obey Allah and obey the Messenger. So, we have many instances in the Holy Quran that two actions must accompany each other. And the third and last point regarding the verse is that in the Holy Quran, the sentence, but if you turn away, is used many times. So in our case, the verse says, فَإِن تَوَلَّوْا. So in all cases, it is used for sympathizing with the Prophet ﷺ so that he would not get discouraged about his mission concerning people's inattention and heedlessness. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this episode as well. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.ir. Until the next program, take care.
Things always, but for me, worry ends when faith begins.
Farewell to life.
Part 2.
The moment of farewell is one of the hardest moments for anyone. Whether it is saying farewell to your family, your home, your homeland, and the most significant of all, saying farewell to life. But for a fighter, the hardest one is to say farewell to their arms. Palestinian fighter and leader Yasser Arafat was a man who experienced each and every one of these farewells throughout his life. Now, he had turned into a comatose in a hospital bed in France before he experienced those farewells. His first painful farewell took place 50 years ago when he witnessed a series of events that changed his course of life. It was springtime in the small village of Deir Yassin. The inhabitants of the village did not want any war with the intruders. But sometime later, the United Nations divided Palestine into two Arab and Jewish sectors and caused rifts instead of solving the differences.
The resolution of the Duck Committee for Palestine was adopted by 33 votes, 13 against, 10 abstentions.
After the UN resolution, the Palestinians possessed only 45% of their country in two disjointed segments, namely the Gaza Strip and the West Bank. The rest of the 55% was given to the minority Jews with a 500,000 population. By recognizing Israel as a so-called state, a war started. Now the Jews could expel the Palestinians out of their homes and replace them with the newly arrived Jewish immigrants. A year later, Israelis were the winners of the war. The 65,000 strong army that had come from 7 Arab states to help the Palestinians could not do much. They were less than half the Israeli forces in numbers. On the other hand, the Israelis' newly purchased equipment, compared to the Palestinians' old and dilapidated equipment, made many people disappointed. The immigrant Jews, who had only purchased only 2% of Palestine's land from the British, were now occupying 70% of the land. The war claimed the lives of 25,000 people and left 700,000 Palestinians homeless and displaced. They migrated to neighboring countries. People lived cold and grim lives away from home. Their only hope was to return to their homes one day. Tensions were on the rise along the borders. The armed forces on the Jordanian and Syrian borders were on high alert. To support them, Gamal deployed 80,000 troops to the Sinai Desert and the Gaza Strip. The King of Jordan traveled to Cairo to sign a defense pact with Egypt. Syria and Iraq also joined the pact. The Middle East turned into a powder keg. A single spark could burn it in flames. Israel found itself surrounded from all sides, so it declares a state of emergency in all of its military bases. The commander of the Israeli army claimed that they're ready to enter any war the next day. All eyes are fixed on Gamal, so he'd start the war and end the Israeli entity before it could celebrate its 20th birthday. As a next step, he blocks all maritime crossings for Israel. 9 months later, the news of an explosion shocks everyone. A roadside blast targets a bus in Israeli-occupied territory, leading to the death of 2 Israelis. The Israeli army announces it will give an unforgettable lesson to the fighters who carried out this attack. A small group named Fatah claims responsibility for the operation. Their base was in a small town of Karameh, located near the Jordanian border. Gamal was worried a new war would create trouble for Arab states, so he asked the Fatah forces to immediately leave town. The Jordanian army made the same request, but Fatah members wanted to stay, even if it meant they had to give up their lives. Israel thought such a small group wouldn't be much of trouble for them, so they immediately sent 15,000 troops and 50 tanks to the village. The situation was dangerous for Israel. They were looking for a way to stop Arafat. It seemed impossible in a region where no country recognized Israel. At the same time, when tensions are rising in Lebanon over Arafat's presence, Fatah stepped up its activities. Some people in Lebanon did not want Arafat to use the land as a base for a war against Israel. All the opposition came from the Falangis movement, an organization that was created from the merger of some Christian Lebanese groups. Arafat did not want to destabilize Lebanon, but as the Christian paramilitary groups continued their provocations, some Fatah forces got into conflict with them. Once again, it was springtime, and Palestinians hit hard luck. In a surprise attack on a bus, 27 Palestinians and Lebanese were killed. The Falangis claimed responsibility for the attack. The Lebanese government asked them to surrender those responsible, but they refused and took control of the area. No one expected such an attack, as the Falangis were just a political movement in Lebanon without much military power. A young man named Bachir Gemayel becomes commander of the armed militia of the Falangis. A month before the attack, they rapidly transformed into a disciplined and well-equipped military force at a time when they received multiple ships full of weapons and military equipment. Something was written on all the equipment made in Israel. It meant that Israel had started a proxy war against Arafat. At the moment when Arafat needed foreign help more than ever, things did not go well. In Egypt, Gamal Abdel Nasser's advisor and deputy succeeded him, but he took a different path.
Let us agree that whatever happens between us, we should solve it together through talks rather than going to war.
Egypt could retake the Sinai Desert after 20 years of Israeli occupation and then avoid conflict with Israel for the sake of establishing peace. But it wasn't the end of the story. Arafat asked different parties to help establish a ceasefire. In no time, the pressure piles up on Lebanon. A part of the Israeli army enters southern Lebanon with the help of the Falangis. Arafat decided to seek help from outside the Middle East to solve the problem. Arafat thought that the U.S. was the only country that could help him in this matter. Israel accepted the ceasefire at the request of Washington. A year has passed after the ceasefire, and during this period, Israel kept many Israeli forces on the border on standby. They wanted to speed up the war, so they appointed Ariel Sharon as the Minister of Military Affairs. Violence was the most prominent characteristic. In violation of the ceasefire deal, on the morning of the 3rd of June, 1983, Israeli forces prepare for all-out attack. 120,000 soldiers, backed up by 1,600 tanks, moved on Lebanon. Days, the Israeli army reached the outskirts of Beirut without any major impediment. Even resistance within the cities could not slow down the Israeli advance. Arafat issued the order to retreat to all of his forces in order to buy time to reinforce. Now, the enemy was behind the gates of the city.
We are here, and we continue to be here, and we will defend this city. The first, it is very important, it is the first Arab capital which the Israeli are blockading. It is very important. You have to put in consideration what it means for the next generation. What have been done, you will pay its price.
Sharon's helicopter landed at Beirut's military airport so he could meet with the Falang leaders. Arafat's bases were bombarded at his orders. For him, destroying Arafat was the main goal. A missile directly hits his office. But Arafat had left the office a few moments earlier. He was cornered, he was completely surrounded, and had no way to escape. For 9 weeks, gray clouds covered the sky over Beirut, the defenseless city. Israel claimed that the targets of the attack were Fatah forces, but it is unarmed civilians who suffered the most. Arafat had to make a hard choice. To what extent did the people have to pay the price for the war? What had to be done in order to get out of this situation? And who could help him?
Good evening. President Reagan said today he's lost patience with the continuing bloodshed in Lebanon, and he all but demanded that it stop, telling reporters he intends to make that point quite firmly with Israeli officials.
American representatives enter Beirut to establish a ceasefire once again. The U.S. won Arafat's confidence and, more importantly, convinced him to take all Fatah forces out of Lebanon. In return, Arafat asked for the security of Palestinian refugee camps. In the end, the Falangists also reached their goal. After 7 years of war and bloodshed, their leader was to become the president of Lebanon. Fatah forces said farewell to Lebanon in several stages. After a few days, the final group prepared to leave. Arafat was the last person who was going to say farewell to Lebanon.
This is a part of the long march, yes, to our independent state, to our capital, Palestine, Jerusalem.
Arafat stepped into the path of the unknown with an unknown destination. It seemed that fate had driven a wedge between Arafat and Palestine.
Meanwhile, the number of dead and injured in yesterday's explosion, which killed President-elect Bashir Jamal, has reportedly reached at least 60. No one yet has claimed responsibility for the bombing.
No one knew who carried out the explosion. But the Israelis and Falangists accused the Palestinians. Sharon claimed the Fatah forces had not completely left Palestine and were hiding in Palestinian camps. So he ordered a lockdown on them to find Fatah forces, he went to the Sabra and Shatila camps for the start. Qatar's base was located near the camps. The residents decided not to resist against Israelis and the Falangists. After 3 days, when the Israelis surround the camps, the Falangists were allowed to enter the camps and trigger a catastrophe. According to local sources, 3,000 people died in that massacre. Many of the bodies were beyond recognition. Many were buried in mass graves in order to hide this atrocity. The Lebanese government could only identify 300 of the many victims.
Colonel Naftali Bairi says he thought the Christian militia was sent in to drive out terrorists, not to kill civilians.
Do you think it was right to let them in there?
Maybe it was right to let them in, but nobody thought that that's what the result.
Arafat was shocked after he heard the news. He had trusted the U.S., but now faced what he feared most.
Protesting against this massacres and genocides against the Palestinians, which have been planned and organized by the Israelis, by the Israeli troops, and I'm sorry to say, and covered completely by the American administration.
5 months after the Sabra and Shatila massacre, a court hearing was held in Israel to shed light on the event. During the proceedings, it was revealed that the explosion was carried out by a Christian member of a Syrian organization and that the Palestinians had no involvement in the incident. Although Sharon was blamed for the negligence, he continued to remain in his post. And even in the next administration, only his ministry changes. When Arafat wanted to set up Fatah anew, he faced a crisis. He was confused for a few months, but he finally settles down in Tunisia, 3,000 kilometers away from Palestine. The long distance would make it very unlikely that war would be dragged to Tunisia. But at the same time, the distance had made continuing the struggle a daunting task for Fatah.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Welcome to our program.
The Key here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we are going to be looking at a very interesting question. And that question is, who should we avoid seeking counsel from? As you know, counsel, which we call mashwira or shura or mushawira in Arabic, this is something very significant. We have all been advised, you know, when taking very important decisions, to take the advice of others, to take, you know, the counsel of others. In fact, this has been mentioned in the Holy Quran. In one verse of the Holy Quran, we read the following: those who answer their Lord maintain the prayer, and their affairs are executed by counsel among themselves, and they spend out of what we have provided them with. All right, so this is something important that, you know, all of us, whenever we want to come to a decision about something very significant, we should always seek the counsel of others before coming to a decision. Now, but just like everything, this has its conditions, stipulations, and, you know, we shouldn't seek counsel from any and every person. In this today's session of The Key, we're going to be looking at what we should do or who we should not seek counsel from, obviously in the light of the hadith. In one prophetic hadith, Imam Ali alayhi salam has been advised by the Holy Prophet in the following way. The Prophet said, "O Ali, do not seek counsel from a coward, for verily he will confine and narrow the way out for you." Obviously, he's a coward, so he's going to give you a very restricted advice. Then the Prophet said, "Nor from the miser, for verily he will hold you back from your goal." Like, for example, let's say that you want to start a business and you go ask a miser about it, and you'll say, "No, you should save your money and be careful. You might, if you invest in such and such a thing, or you want to start a business, you might end up losing your money. How do you know you're going to be successful in your investment?" He won't advise you to take any risk whatsoever. So you might end up, you know, losing that money that you could have, or that profit that you could have acquired and accrued had you invested your money in a certain place or done something, started a certain business, and so on. Then the Prophet said, nor from the covetous one, for verily he will make greediness fair seeming to you. You know, don't seek advice from a greedy person, because, you know, that greedy person, you know, he might advise you to do something where you, you know, end up, you know, usurping the rights of others, or, you know, oppressing them, you know, just to make money. Or he might even advise you to do something which is to his profit and to his gain. You know, he might be, you know, looking at his own personal interests when he's giving you advice, right? So this is not something you should look at somebody who gives you some objective advice. It doesn't take his own personal interest into consideration when he's giving you advice. In another hadith, this hadith has been narrated from Imam Ali. Imam Ali alayhi salam said, "Do not seek counsel from a liar, for verily he is like a mirage. He makes that which is far appear near, and he makes that which is near appear far." Right. So liars also, we should avoid taking counsel from them, because obviously, you know, they mix the truth with falsehood, and, you know, we don't know whether what they're advising us with is really true. You know, what if they're giving us objective advice or not. Rather, we should seek somebody who is truthful and sincere with us when we're taking advice from them. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at the people who we should not take counsel from in the light of the Quran and Hadith. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussain Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
What you heard was an IRIB English Radio program.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side.